makes you think that the government is not doing it the most it can in regards to children and their safety and their health?
Because the government is not listening to the stakeholders that are expressing diverse and varying opinions from their from public health and from the science table. So the only consultations they're doing are consultations that are pro-lockdown and that are politically motivated to see that we have continued school closures. There's been reported scandals of conflicts of interest, and the government has done nothing to address those. So we can see that the government is not doing their job by listening to all the voices and then coming to a decision that is informed and reflects all the different voices. What we hear, what we're seeing is the government having a very knee-jerk reaction to public health and only following public health. And public health is not consulting all medical expertise, certainly not taking into account the most recent scientific peer-reviewed studies, nor with respect to treatments. So the government is in a way biased and they're not impartial and they're not placing the interests of the children as a primary concern. And our law has determined, especially with regard to the doctrine of the best interests of child, that the best interests of children ought to be a primary concern when we are taking decisions with respect to children.
So what is the primary concern that the government is taking if it's not the children, in your opinion?
I could speculate to that, but I know what they're not doing. The interests of children are set out in our legislation. It's the right to education. It's set out in the Child and Family Services Act. It's set out in our constitution. It's set out in our international treaties, which we are signatory to and which are binding on us, especially on the Convention of the Rights of the Child. So those rights and those responsibilities and obligations that the state has with respect to the children are completely blindsided. And they're not part of the equation when they come when it comes to forming policies with respect to schools. So school closures and online learning are occurring without assessments of the effectiveness of school closures with respect to transmission or infection. Online learning is occurring without any assessment or evidence with respect to the effectiveness and the and or the harms of online learning for children.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of parents don't even call it online learning. Recently, I've listened to a CBC podcast where it's being described as online instruction or teaching because the parents are saying their children are not learning. Mm-hmm. And in fact, they're getting more stressed out by online. So when you close schools and you give the only alternative as being online without having studied it, without assessing it, but just adopting it holus bolus and saying this is the only option that's available.
Mm-hmm.
And then in fact, silencing the voices that are providing evidence that is objective and contrary to that, then the only conclusion you can come up with is no, the government is not acting in the best interests of children. In fact, they're acting contrary to the best interests of children.
Thank you. Do children pose a threat to society?
Well, the latest peer-reviewed medical research that we have is that children pose very low risk of transmission to adults. In fact, children are less likely to give it to adults and adults are more likely to give it to children. So teachers' rate of infection was no greater than adults in any other population or profession.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a study done in Sweden. And Sweden is the country that never closed their school down. Schools were open throughout the pandemic. There was no masking in schools. There was no social distancing in school. There was no online learning. And the New England Journal of Medicine, which is a peer-reviewed publication, basically concluded that Swedish children were better off, and so were their teachers. So there's a fallacy and there's a false assumption that children are super spreaders, or that somehow children going to school will result in grandma dying. So all these images that are being invoked that are purely provocative and fear-based are actually contrary to all the medical evidence that we have. And that medical evidence is not being taken into account when they're formulating policy.
Mm-hmm.
So children, no, do not pose a risk of infection.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not pose a risk of transmission, and their likelihood of contending with this virus is a lot greater. There's low mortality. In fact, there's no mortality that has been recorded. And so really the children are bearing the brunt of the cost of measures that are taken in the name of protecting them.
Thank you. Now, just kind of like a personal slash opinion question, I guess. Which demographic or segment of the adult population do you feel the most disappointed in or shocked by?
Educators, unfortunately, you know, at all levels. And I don't just mean teachers, because we are seeing now teachers are speaking out, but they don't have that political clout, right? Mm-hmm. They've gone to their unions and the unions are not representing children's interests. I hold the school administrators responsible, mm-hmm. the principals, the trustees, the people who are in managerial roles, the superintendents, because they know what parents are saying and they ignore them. Countless parents have petitioned their local school trustee and their superintendent, school superintendent, and provided them with evidence and have asked them, what are your school mandates based on? Mm-hmm. Provide us with that evidence so that we can read it. And here, read what I have that says that this is not good for my child. And they've been ignored. They haven't even been responded to. So, you know, it's very difficult for children's voices to be heard when those who are responsible for speaking on their behalf are either remaining silent or are actively engaged in undermining their rights.
Mm-hmm.
So not only, you know, educators, but, you know, social workers, anyone who interfaces with children, parents who are projecting their own fears onto their children, you know, because they don't have the time or don't have the ability or don't have the wherewithal to do their own independent research and reading, because they're bombarded with messaging from social media as well as from the mainstream press, which has done quite a number on scaring the wits out of parents. So those are the voices that are supposed to be speaking for children, right? Are the parents, the teachers, the nurses, the doctors, the pediatricians, the child psychologists, anyone who interfaces with children. And, you know, to their credit, many are speaking out. And I think that momentum is now building. But we certainly have well-documented evidence of the harms that have occurred for children. And so we need to listen to that. And we need to listen to our children. A lot of times children are complaining about not being able to breathe, about having headaches or having dizziness, about feeling alone and anxiety as a result. Children are having meltdowns every day and parents are just, saying to them, you just have to suck it up. So they have to listen to their children. They have to stop telling their children that or making excuses to their children for why it's okay for them to continue suffering.
Mm.
We cannot continue to justify and stop listening to our children and silencing them, because then we are seeing an increase in childhood depression and anxiety.
Suicides.
Oh, my God. Children committing suicide.
Yeah.
You know, we interviewed so many parents who, before we determined the parents that were going to be part of this application. And, you know, many of them talk about how children have been using credit cards to slash their wrists. Children as young as 6 years old. And a lot of the applicants that we have in the Superior Court application, the harms that are suffered by their children, including, you know, loss of speech development and erosion of learning, and that had occurred. So children we are seeing have regressed and are suffering.
Yeah.
And these are the parents and the doctors and the nurses who are speaking out, and the center is supporting them.
And then last question, what is the best case scenario for you in terms of an outcome of this case?
Best case scenario is to lift the lockdowns. And we've seen that in other jurisdictions. It's to open up schools as they did in Florida, because in Florida they had a lockdown in spring and then they lifted it in September. Mm-hmm. They resumed schools, and compare that to California. California has the strictest, longest lockdown.
Yeah.
Yet in the first wave, the comparison between Florida and California, the death rate, the cumulative death rate was similar. Mm-hmm. And in the second wave, when you had unlocked Florida, it actually had less deaths than lockdown California.
Mm.
So we can see from our neighbors in the South that 25 states are now open and mask mandates have ended. And we can try to take an example from that and end the mandates in school that are preventing our children from interacting and speaking and engaging and learning and having their childhood.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Those are all the questions that I have. Is there anything else that you'd like to add?
No, I just want to say that, you know, apart from the loss of education and learning, there are the neurological and psychological as well as physical impacts of lockdowns in general, but the mandates in school in particular. And we hope that we will have an opportunity to have the courts look at all the evidence in an impartial light, and we're very positive about the outcome because the evidence is so strong.
Thank you so much, Alice.